This is the third Teacher Toolbox episode. I hear from listeners all the time that they like the actionable tips and suggestions for activities that they can use with their students next week or even tomorrow. Now, that usually means that these are effective and beneficial activities, but also ones that require somewhat minimal prep. That's what I bring you in these Teacher Toolbox episodes. And I have another four activities to share with you today, so let's jump in. Are you a language teacher looking for some reassurance that what you're doing in the classroom is on the right track? Or maybe you're looking for some ways to teach even more effectively? If you're one or the other or somewhere in between, you've landed in the right place. This is the World Language Classroom Podcast with your host, me, Joshua Cabral. You're about to get tips, tools, and resources so that your students continue to rise in proficiency and communicate with confidence. Let's jump in. Vamos, allons-y! Hello, my friends. Bonjour, mes amis. Hola, mis amigos. Welcome to the World Language Classroom Podcast. I am Joshua Cabral, and thank you so much for being here each week to listen to what's going on in the language teaching world with other teachers, taking an opportunity to reflect on your own teaching, maybe get some new ideas to take into your classroom. That's what makes you an incredible educator. So thank you for going that extra step with your teaching so that we are all collectively sharing with each other and doing the best we can for our students. So again, thank you so much for being here and taking that on. If you just take a second and make sure that you are liking or following the podcast on whatever app that you're on, that helps to make sure that you get every single episode when they come out on Mondays. And I have a bunch of interviews coming up over the next couple of weeks that will be published throughout the winter and spring with so many incredible educators that you will definitely want to hear from. So make sure that you are liking or following the podcast so you don't miss out on any of those things that are coming up. In this Teacher Toolbox episode, I'm going to be sharing with you four activities that you can do with your students in the classroom. They serve different purposes, and I'm sort of going to tell you what has worked for me and how I do them, but there are always modifications for what's going to work for your students in your classroom at whatever level that you're teaching. So just use these as sort of a spark of inspiration for how you're going to do it. You might find that you'll do it exactly as I'm talking about it, and that's great. That makes it easier. But also, you are a clever and interesting and creative teacher, and I'm sure that you can look at these and think, oh, I could possibly do this with that, or I could do it slightly differently. So whatever those are, I think it's always great when we can continue to share out with each other. So if you do a modification or think about it in a different way, I'd love to hear what you're doing so that we can share it with the wider teacher community. You can do that either in my Facebook group, or you can tell me about it on Twitter. Be sure to tag me at WL Classroom, whether you're posting on Twitter or Instagram or in a Facebook group, so that I can see what you're doing. I'd love to learn from you and see what it inspired in you. And also, I can share it out with the wider teaching community so that we all can continue to learn from each other. So at WL Classroom, wherever you might be posting, and we can continue to learn from each other. So when we think about doing activities in the classroom, now sometimes this is proficiency-based, where we're moving towards some sort of assessment based on proficiency, and sometimes they're performance-based, which is going to be that in-the-process, more formative assessment, where students are getting practice with different vocabulary and structures that are moving towards their higher levels of proficiency. So some of these activities are going to be that opportunity for students, where they are working with particular vocabulary and structures as they're moving on their path to proficiency, but I would say they're definitely more performance-based. And when we're doing activities in the classroom, they have a couple of goals. These are the goals that I keep in mind, or the reason I do activities with students. And the first one is that they create a relaxed context for risk-taking, and they lower that affective filter, so that they are more comfortable using the language and they are not hesitant and have all these walls up, that they're really jumping into it, because there's always an aspect of being compelling or interesting or fun when it comes to these types of activities. And that also helps to build community in the classroom, where students have an understanding of each other, they're more willing to communicate with each other, because again, it's done in a more relaxed and inclusive way that has that aspect of fun. And it's also a way of practicing and reviewing structures as well as idiomatic expressions, because it's not just the goal of the particular activity, but the language students need to use to communicate as they are engaging in the activity. And a lot of times that's going to be idiomatic expressions. Now, I'm going to link the first two episodes that I did on these teacher toolbox activities into the show notes of this episode. So if you haven't caught those, you can get four activities in each one of those episodes. So that's eight right there. You'll have four more today, and you'll be well on your way to maybe adding some new things into your classroom. So the first activity I want to mention is one that I've seen done in a lot of classrooms, and I've done it in my own, and I do it regularly. And some people refer to it as quiz trade, or there's different ways of going about it. But essentially, what you do is you have the entire class standing up, and they all get a card or a piece of paper with some sort of prompt on it. Now, this could be just a vocabulary picture. And if this is a novice level class, then they are just saying whatever that picture is. So for the example of how to do the activity just with a picture on a piece of paper, they go up to any other student and they can just say, identify what that is a picture of. It might be a classroom object, it might be food, it might be an animal, anything. And they just say what it is, then the other person says what theirs is, and then they exchange them, and then they go on to another person. Now, there are different ways to do this. You could have students, once they have exchanged and they've moved on, they raise their hand so everyone knows they're available. So you go to a new person, and then you say whatever your card is, whatever the picture is on your card or piece of paper. And then the partner will do the same, and then you exchange them. And then you just keep going. So essentially what's going to happen is if you have 20, 25 students doing this or 15 students doing this, you're going to have that many prompts that are constantly changing hands and students are up and moving. Now, that is a very novice level activity, very novice low even, because they're just identifying a picture. So you could put anything on these pieces of paper or card as prompts. So it could be questions where they're asking their partner a question, they answer it, and then they get a question, they answer it, then they exchange, they find someone else, they continue with the questions. You could have sentence starters where they say the sentence starter and then complete the sentence. Partner does it, they exchange, they move on. You could have one student perhaps say their opinion of something that's a picture on there or explain something. Then the partner can ask a question about it. Then they exchange after they've both done that. You could have things that are done in time frames where you could have past, present, or future, and then a picture of an activity, and the student has to say it in that time frame, like I'm going to eat, or I ate, or I am eating, so that they're practicing in different time frames and then exchange. You could have information about a story that you're reading. If you're reading a book in class and there are characters in it, you could have a character trait or the name of the character, and a student has to say something about that character, and then the other person has another character, they do the same, then they exchange. So what you're also doing is you're doing output, but there's also input because you're hearing what your partner is saying as well. And so this could go into much higher levels than just like the novice that I'm talking about. Because you could have students, even all the way through the AP level, give a concept on there, and they're explaining something about the concept, and maybe it's in an article that you have read about some cultural aspect, or there's a picture of some sort of cultural aspect, and that students are then producing much more language at a higher proficiency level than exchanging or listening to the other partner first, then exchanging, and then moving on. And so what's happening is it's an easy way to recycle through a lot of different sort of micro themes within the larger theme to hear what partners are saying. Then you're able to, in a very low affective filter situation, make your own comment. What I would suggest, and which always works quite well for me in my own classroom, is to insert myself into the activity. So I also start with a card. So I engage with almost every single student as well. So they're hearing me talk about something, or I'm asking them a question, then they're responding back to me. So it's some quick one-on-one time with every student in the classroom. And then what I also do is I have a lot more prompts than the number of students in the class. So as I get a card, I cycle it out and put a new card in, and I keep going with that one. So it's not always the same cards going around. So students will end up with the same one or two times. As I get a card, I put it aside and I take a new card, and then I put that back into circulation into the activity. So this is a way to get students up and moving, talking with each other, and using very directly and concretely the themes and vocabulary that you're working with, and also an opportunity to have some quick one-on-one time with each student in the class. So that is Quiz Trade. I'd love to hear what things you might be doing with it, what themes you're using it for, and share out, because I'd like to learn from you, and I'd love to be able to share that out with other teachers as well. Okay, now the second activity I call At the Table, and I actually have a blog post about this particular activity, so you might be able to see it a little more visually by taking a look at the blog post, which will be in the show notes, so be sure to take a look at that. Again, I will start with a novice level activity, and then I will show you how I do it at much higher proficiency levels as well. So what I do is I put a couple of tables around the room, and students are just standing up. Nobody's at a table. So you'll see with a lot of these activities, they're up and moving. So it's an opportunity for that. That's what lowers that affective filter a little bit with students. On the tables, say this is a novice low activity, I will just put a bunch of pictures on the table. There might be four or five pictures on the table. Again, whatever theme you happen to be working on, concrete novice level. So you could do something like play music and have students walk around the room, and when the music stops, have them stop at a table. So they have to choose a table and they stop at that table. So if there are pictures on the table, I also have all of the words for the pictures written on pieces of paper with me as well. So when the music stops and they're at a table, I pick one of the pieces of paper with a word on it, I say the word, or I show it to the class and say it so they can see the word, and if they are standing at the table with that picture, so they have to recognize, they have to make the connection between the word and the picture at the table, then they get a point, and I just have them go to the board, put their name up, and put a point underneath it, and as we're going on, they will continue to put points up on the board so they can have a running list of them. So once that little round is done, play the music again, they start moving, they have to move to a new table, again, do it as you want, I just like to keep them moving, not to stay at the same table, even though there might be five or six pictures on there. The other thing is, I tell them also that I put the word paper or card back in the pile so it can come out again, so they can't sort of be thinking that, oh, I'm just going to go to the table that has the new pictures or something like that. And then at the end of the time, you can see who has the most points. It's a kind of game of chance. There's not a whole lot of skill in choosing it, but what it is an opportunity to quickly review vocabulary where students are recognizing the pictures, where they are seeing the words and making that connection there in a very low affective filter situation. And before you do a more proficiency-based activity, to do an activity like this gets them ready and has that opportunity to cycle through and review a lot of vocabulary before going deeper with it. So again, that activity was novice level. I always like to explain at the novice level so that we can concretely understand what it looks like. So I said just put pictures on the table, but you could do pretty much anything with this. If you are reading a story, you could have information about the story on the table. So you can have five or six cards on each table, and they have information about the story that you're reading or information about an article that you're reading. And as the music stops, they go to a table. Then I have a list of questions written on cards of pieces of paper, and then I pull that and I ask the question. And if they're at a table with that answer, then they recognize that is the answer. We confirm that's the answer, and then they'll go and get a point. So see, it doesn't have to be just simple, concrete vocabulary. Again, it could be story information, like characters in a story, where you have just the names of people in the story at the different tables, or information about the people in the story, and you're either pulling out character names, or you're pulling out information about individual characters, or you could even do it with something like verb tenses, you know, where you have adverbs on the table that show future, past, present time, or if you're doing a language that has the imperfect or a simple past tense, and there are going to be adverbs adverbs that are different based on the verb tenses. So you could also have sentences on the table and you pull out an adverb. And if they have a sentence on their table that goes with that adverb, they'll go and put a point on the board for themselves. Ongoing, you could flip it and have adverbs on the table and you say a sentence in one of the verb tenses. So different ways to go about this, from the concrete one, or you could have information from an article or a story or verb tenses. And you can add a speaking aspect into this because you could have students give some information orally, some sort of output before they put their point on the board. Not necessary, because it could just be an interpretive listening activity, but if you want to make it somewhat interactive with some output, you could have students at the table that are all gathered to say something about the prompts there, or say something to you as they're putting their point on the board. But again, it could just be interpretive listening as well, and a little bit of interpretive reading if they're seeing the prompts that you're pulling out as the teacher. So we had quiz, quiz, trade, and we had at the table, as I call it. And now the third one I want to talk about is what I call shipwreck, and I call it naufragio or naufrage in Spanish and French. But to do this, it's an easy setup. I also have a blog post, which is in the show notes, so you can see visually what it looks like. But you start with a Google Doc or a Word doc. And so you just open up your electronic document. And I start with maybe 80 to 100 squares. So just set up a grid with 80 to 100 squares. So that's 10 across, 10 down, or 10 down, 8 across. Doesn't really matter. Just a grid with a lot of boxes in it. And then you fill the boxes with particular prompts. And for this activity, this is done in groups of two or three rather than a whole class activity as we were doing before. So you give each group a copy of this, I'll call it game board, which are these 80 to 100 squares with prompts in them. And I will give the quick novice low way of going about this for an easy explanation, and then some ways of doing it at higher proficiency levels. So you could just put a bunch of pictures in the boxes. Now, you're probably not going to have 100 pictures on a particular theme, like if it's classroom objects or food. So what you can do is have maybe 20 and you repeat them four or five times. So just not next to each other in the boxes, but just fill all the boxes. So I just cut and paste, cut and paste, cut and paste. Or you could have words in the boxes. But let's talk first about just having pictures in there. So you have the three players and they're all working on one board. And this is an output speaking activity. So each player has their own colored pencil and it has to be a different color so they can keep track of who is getting each box. So player one just chooses any box and you give them a prompt of what they're going to have to do. So if this is a novice low class where it's single word output, they're just going to identify what the picture is. So let's go with this example. So they're novice low, they identify the picture, and the other two players, or the other player, if they're only in groups of two, they verify and agree, yes, that's correct. If they don't think it's correct, you could perhaps have a reference sheet that has the words in the pictures so they can check it, or maybe call the teacher over to check. But usually, they're going to get it right because they're choosing boxes that they know the answer to. So when they get it right, they color the box in with their color. Then play goes to the next person. So you just keep going in a circle so that all three are responding to the prompt, whatever the prompt is for them, could be just identifying the picture, and then they color in the box with their colored pencil. Now the goal is to try to get three boxes in a row, either horizontally or vertically. I don't do diagonally. And if they get three in a row, they get a point, and they put their points on the bottom of the sheet, or they keep track of it somewhere. So now the other players, they're trying to block from getting three in a row for the other players while simultaneously trying to get three in a row. So where it gets interesting is when a student does have three in a row, then I tell them you can continue to build on that. So they could do a fourth square next to the boxes they already have colored in with their colors, and that counts as a point because it's three in a row again. So that sometimes makes it necessary for the other players to try something out, and maybe it's not a box they're totally comfortable with. They don't know maybe what it is, but they have to try because that's how the block is going to get in. Some students, they play with no blocking and they just try to see who can get the highest number of boxes. So that kind of goes around, and then you can say the first student to get to 10 kind of wins the round, or you could do it at the end of a time period. That's usually what I do. And maybe, you know, sticker, prize, whatever thing that is going to work. Sometimes it's just bragging rights when they win. So that example was with just pictures in the boxes, but you could put anything in there. I've done things like characters from stories again. I've put information from the different stories that we're reading. You could also put adverbs in there, and students have to use that adverb in a sentence, which might be in the future or the past or the present. You might have just objects in there again, but you can change up the prompt and say that, yes, it is a picture of a pencil. Yes, it is the picture of a bookshelf or something like in the classroom. Now, for novice low, you'll just have them identify it. But if you have students that are at higher proficiency levels, you can use the same board but change the prompt. So now they have to use possessive adjectives with it and say, my pencil is something, or your pencil is something. So again, you can use the same board, but you can change out the prompt, which is where that low prep kind of thing comes in. You could also have verbs, and you can have them in various forms, maybe the infinitive, and then students have to put it in the correct form. That would be sort of a novice mid, novice high. But if you're going into the intermediate level, students have to do more with it. They have to then make an entire sentence and make sure that they are creating with that verb around it. Or you could put question words in there, and students have to ask questions. I'm always looking for more opportunities for students to practice with questions. So if you put question words in the boxes, then it's that opportunity for them to ask lots of questions as they're going through. So you can change out the prompts using the same board, and you can go through different proficiency levels that way. You could also do it with pronouns, you know, so that you could have direct and indirect object pronouns, where you could have a picture or a word for an object, and students have to say a sentence using the pronoun for it. So it could be the board you're using for novice low, where they're just identifying the pictures. But if you have an intermediate group, you can use the same board and just change the prompt to say you have to use it in a sentence, and then say the sentence using a pronoun that's replacing that noun. So different ways to use the same board that you've created along with different proficiency levels. And there is a link in the show notes, so you can see my blog post on those as well, so you can get some ideas for using that. So we started with quiz trade, then we looked at the table, and then we looked at shipwreck. So now the fourth activity that I want to tell you about uses playing cards. I always like activities where I can use dice and playing cards in the classroom because they're easy to come by. You can usually find them in and around school, and there's not a lot of prep when students are using those in their activities. This is cards for the path. I call it El Camino or Le Chemin, depending on what language that you are teaching. Then you can use this activity with that language, and just whatever the word is for path is what I use to name this. So there is a blog post for this as well in the show notes. Be sure to check it out so you can see exactly what it looks like with students. But with this, it's all based on the playing cards, a deck of ordinary playing cards. Doesn't matter what's on them, just regular playing cards. I set up a sheet as a reference to start. So I have the four suits across the top, so hearts, diamonds, spades, and clubs. And then down the left-hand side, so I set it up as a grid. So down the left-hand side, I have ace through 10, and then jack, king, queen. So across the top, you have the suits, and down the side, you have what is on the face cards or number cards. So now, within the grid, everything matches up. So you can go to the top and look at hearts, and then the number 3 on the side, and then you can match up the 3 of hearts. So go down the column from the hearts to the number 3, and then you'll have something in that box. So you will have a lot of boxes that have all kinds of information in them. That, again, is going to be up to you and what that prompt is going to look like. It could be, we'll start with the novice low again, it could just be pictures. It could be pictures of vocabulary that you're studying, and novice low students will just identify what that picture is. And you can do anything in the boxes like we talked with all the other activities. It can be information about a story. It could be question words. It could be numbers. It could be time, where students just say the time, or they could say an entire sentence with the time. You know, time and date and things like that and weather, they work well for the prompts with all the other activities as well. So the way this works is you start with groups of three. That usually works pretty well. Sometimes two. It goes a little quick with two, so sometimes three is better. With each group of three, I give them this reference sheet. So it's the sheet that has the suits across the top, the numbers and face cards down the side, and it's one big grid where they can match up everything like Ace of Hearts, and there's something in the box that goes in there. So they get that reference sheet, and then they get a deck of the playing cards. So I usually give them 3 or 4 minutes as a group to create a huge path with all of the cards in the deck. Sometimes they'll do one big straight line. Sometimes they'll do a big spiral. They'll do curvy ways of going around desks or chairs or on tables. Just 3 or 4 minutes to create a path with a definite start and a definite end with all of the cards just back to back with each other, but face up so they can see what they all are. So each player is then going to have an individual playing piece so that they can keep track of where they are in the path. This could be a small personal item of theirs they want to use. I will let them find things around the classroom. It doesn't really matter what they are. Sometimes I give them little magnets that are different colors, as long as they can distinguish the different players. So then they're ready to start. They have their playing pieces, and then they need one die. So player one, they roll the die, they get a number, say it's a 3. So they'll start at the beginning of their path, and they'll move 3 cards up on the path. And then whatever card they land on, say it's the 4 of spades, they'll look at the reference sheet, they'll look at the number 4, they'll go over to the column with spades, and there'll be a box there that matches up, and then they just perform whatever is in that box. So if they are novice low, they're just going to identify maybe a picture in there. But you could go all the way up for it being information about a story. Now, this can seem a little on the younger side, so maybe middle school through 9th grade. But I will tell you, I have done this with older students that are 16, 17 years old, and sometimes they like to get into these types of games as well, where they're challenging each other, but also using the target language quite a bit, depending on what the prompts are. I have found a lot of success using particularly things like numbers or telling time on here. And if they're on the novice level, they'll just say the time. But if you have more intermediate students, then you can have them say at what time they do things. So using that time that comes up in the box. And then they'll just keep going around, each person getting a chance to roll the die. Much like with the shipwreck activity, the other players have to agree that it's correct, and they can call the teacher over to verify if they are contesting something, or perhaps you can also have a reference sheet for them to check as needed. And then whoever gets to the end first will win, and they can have their bragging rights, or you could have some sort of incentive. But then they can also go back to the beginning and start all over again. They could maybe redo their path. That's where they like to get creative with it. We had our 4 activities today. We started with quiz trade, and then we looked at the table, where the students were going around to the different tables. So there's a blog post for at the table. Then we looked at shipwreck. So that also has a blog post. And then the cards and the path activity I just talked about, that also has a blog post. So there's all 3 of those. The only one I don't have a blog post on is the quiz trade. So I might be doing one soon. But in terms of the show notes for this episode, you will find the blog post to those last 3 activities so that you can see visually what they look like and get some ideas for what you might want to do on your own. And I look forward to seeing what you come up with and what maybe these ideas have sparked for you individually. So make sure that you share it out on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook groups and tag me at WL Classroom so that I can learn from you as well and also share out with other teachers. Be sure to check out the show notes where you'll see the links to the blog post that I mentioned in this episode, because sometimes a visual helps with these activities. You'll also see the links to the two previous episodes I did on the teacher toolbox so that you can have another 8 activities to add to your repertoire. There are also links to sign up for Talking Points, my weekly email newsletter with tips and resources for language teaching, and links to get in touch with me if you would like to work together, either in person in your school or remotely. I will talk to you soon. Bye for now. You've been listening to the World Language Classroom Podcast. Be sure to follow or subscribe wherever you're listening so you don't miss a single episode. Let's continue the conversation on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at WL Classroom. You can also see over 250 blog posts about language teaching at, you guessed it, WLClassroom.com.